Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service, with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Jackie Leonard, and at 13 hours GMT on Wednesday the 27th of May, these are our main stories. In Hong Kong, riot police have been trying to disperse protests against a law that would make it illegal to insult China's national anthem. A stark warning about the global impact of the pandemic on young people. And official data in France suggest the economy will contract by 20% this quarter because of the coronavirus. Also in this podcast...
Should have listened from the beginning. I agree. I didn't do that. And I'm sorry. And I know there are people that won't forgive me.
How one COVID-19 patient in Florida paid the price for believing misinformation about the virus. And why a pigeon is under arrest in Indian-administered Kashmir. Protesters have been out in force on the streets of Hong Kong, and so have the security forces. That's the sound of pepper ball rounds being fired by riot police. Democracy activists rallied as the territory's politicians debated a bill that would criminalise insulting China's national anthem. Arthur Lee is a member of the Executive Council, Hong Kong's top policy-making body. Speaking to the BBC, he defended the law.
We have seen in Hong Kong that when the national anthem is being played in public events, some people started booing it. And this is very upsetting for a lot of Hong Kong people who feels that, first of all, it's bad manners. Secondly, it is a national anthem. And thirdly, something needs to be done about it.
The protesters are also angry about a planned new national security law that they fear will lead to many arrests and imprisonment for any criticism of China. Many analysts expect both bills to become law. This activist warned that if Hong Kongers didn't stand up now, it would soon be too late.
People are entitled to protest and coming into assembly. So I think this is definitely an abuse of power, that blocking all the peaceful assemblies and all the application for rallies. For now, it is important for us, for people, to realise it is time to protest. If we don't protest, we give up our rights, and there are no way back for Hong Kong people here. The national security law is implemented.
For more on what's been happening, here's our correspondent Martin Yip in Hong Kong.
Demonstrators had initially planned to gather at the Legislative Council, but the building was surrounded by riot police, prompting groups of protesters to block major motorways instead with plastic barriers and litter bins. The police responded with pepper balls containing chemicals that irritate the eyes and nose. Inside the legislature, pro-democracy councillors who opposed the bill failed in their attempt to use a procedural manoeuvre to stop this second reading. They argued the proposed law, backed by Beijing, would threaten freedom of speech. But supporters of the bill say that booing of the Chinese national anthem, which often happens at football games in Hong Kong, is offensive and must be outlawed.
Martin Yip, speaking from Hong Kong. Across the world, huge numbers of people have lost their jobs due to the coronavirus pandemic. But it turns out we're not all in this together. Some groups of people are far worse hit than others. For instance, new analysis from the International Labour Organization says young people are being disproportionately affected, and the global crisis is inflicting a triple threat on the younger generation. Our Geneva correspondent Imogen Folks told us more.
Well, what the ILO has been doing is been publishing regular labour market analyses since the start of the pandemic and the disruption to the employment market. And the focus in this one is on young people, the under 24s, the 16 to 24s, say, in the work market. They say that more than one in six have actually had to stop working since the pandemic began. They said that others, the average, have seen their working hours cut by 23%. And of course, all the other things that go with these restrictions, the disrupted education, the disrupted training, the inability to get into the jobs market right now, the worry that university degrees may not be able to be completed. So all of this, what they describe it really is almost like a triple whammy for the young generation, who they say are really being the hardest hit.
And are there specific young people who are being particularly affected, perhaps in terms of their sex or geography?
Well, as with nearly every economic indicator, women seem to be the most negatively impacted. We know that it's harder in every country, really, sometimes for women to enter and succeed in the jobs market, to get parity of pay with men. So young women are being harder hit than young men. But overall, basically for young people, it's like their life is on hold and they can't really see where their next step can be because many, many doors have been shut. And unfortunately, the jobs open to young people now that they can remain in, often they are in the very informal sector, the hourly pay, flexible in restaurants, in agriculture, this kind of thing. But steady jobs, getting into a steady job and advancing up a career, all of that is on hold for the moment.
And the ILO, having identified this problem, do they have any suggestions on how to overcome it?
Well, they want governments to focus particularly on young people. And what they want is really big, and of course, again, this will cost money and time, but they want a big investment in training programs and in job guarantees, employment guarantees for young people. At some point or other, this crisis is going to end for all of us, and we need a stable economy after that. And underpinning a stable economy are young people who will be in the labour market for another 40, 50 years.
Imogen Folks, our correspondent in Geneva. The coronavirus pandemic has forced the bulk of global economic activity to shut down. But now, as the lockdowns are easing in some countries, the impact is starting to emerge. Official figures in France show that the economy will contract by 20% in the second quarter. Our economics correspondent Andrew Walker told us what a 20% contraction would look like.
In the context we're in now, it looks like very fewer people on the streets, factories not entirely closed down, but certainly operating much less, and many factories actually not producing at all. This is a 20% figure, is an estimate of what is likely to happen. And it's very striking that the French Statistics Agency actually thinks that for the month of April particularly, we were looking at an even deeper decline, something like 35% below normal levels of activity. They're seeing some signs of a cautious return to activity, both on the part of consumers and on the part of business this month, and a little bit more next month. But it still means that they think we are looking at an absolutely enormous decline in economic activity for the three-month period, which frankly, if it were sustained for a long time, would look very severe indeed. The assumption is that it's not going to be sustained for a very long time, that things will start to come back more during the course of the year. But we are, I think most economists reckon, looking at significant long-term economic damage, having hoped that it might all be really relatively temporary earlier on in the crisis.
And we're talking about France today, but presumably this is going to be reflected in economies all over the world. And presumably we will see it, as you say, get worse before it gets better.
The figures certainly will get very much worse. The great majority of countries are likely to see the current quarter, that's between April and June, as being the weakest period of all, provided, that is, we are right to assume that the impact of the health crisis is going to ease further over time. China is obviously an exception to that, having gone into this crisis first. They've already seen some more signs of a return to normal, but I think for the great majority of economies in the world, the current quarter is likely to be the trough.
That was Andrew Walker, our economics correspondent. As cases of COVID-19 continue to rise in South Africa, there's a growing realisation that the virus will be around for some time. So companies are finding ways to curb the spread while also allowing people to slowly get their lives back on track. Vumani Mkize sent this report from Johannesburg.
It's rush hour in South Africa's largest township, and residents are making their way to work. With lockdown regulations starting to ease, there's a palpable sense of relief. They can start making a living again. Johannesburg's bus rapid transport system carries over 45,000 passengers daily, and as South Africa's economy slowly begins to reopen after weeks of hard lockdown, people are on the move again.
This is the new normal for public transport users here in Soweto. A local company has created this sanitization booth, which takes your temperature before it sprays you with a water-based sanitizer. And thereafter, passengers can go and enter the bus.
Some passengers say they've adopted a new way of living.
If I had to go back to normal living a month ago, I would have probably ingested corona because it wasn't normal for me to sanitize, but now it's in my system.
But with so many people on the move again, and with minimal social distancing, the risk of spreading the virus increases, a major concern for transport authorities.
We can't afford this. This is a dead zone. Once people get into these buses the way they are, and then they cram into the buses, we are just transporting the disease. That's what we are doing.
While Transport Minister Fikile Mbalula was happy about people wearing masks, the congested buses are still a major concern.
We've got to limit the number of passengers and increase the operation. And the operation, you can see, it is in full force. So the numbers must not be negotiated. A mask, sanitizing the bus, and then social distance once you are inside.
The sanitization booths at the bus terminals are made by Raw Industries, a local bus-making company that's had to pivot its operations in order to survive.
Our young engineers came up with the designs. And then after the designs, it was the production. And we had to hit the ground running.
The company's CEO, Vuyelo Penga, says the booths provide a quick and efficient way of disinfecting a large amount of people.
We started with the mine. That is where we fitted our first booth. And then after the mine, we fitted another one in hospital. Now you will realize that in both situations, there are people involved. There are crowds involved. So that is why we started there. So we are looking at expanding into bus stations, into malls, wherever you find that there are crowds.
Besides commuting, the world of work and education has also been fundamentally changed by this pandemic. Mr. Plastic is a Johannesburg-based company. Melville van Niekerk says the company creates Perspex sneeze screens and dividers for a number of businesses.
We're doing big companies that have got all their reception desks, dispatch desks like we've got, people that are working, salespeople have got the dividers between them. So every client's needs are different.
Back in Soweto, people seem to grasp the danger that the coronavirus presents. They are wearing masks and most of them are observing social distancing. It seems the new normal is upon us.
Bumani Mkize reporting from Johannesburg. The aid agency Oxfam has warned that millions of people in the Horn of Africa and regions nearby are at risk from locusts. Severe flooding and an earlier locust invasion have already devastated vast quantities of crops. Our Africa editor Mary Harper reports.
Oxfam says the new locust swarms could be 400 times larger than the original invasion, already the worst in 70 years. Heavy rains, exacerbated by climate change, have created perfect breeding conditions for the pests. They're due to hatch next month, just as crops are ready for harvest. Locusts eat their own body weight in food every day, ravaging fields in minutes. Oxfam says the region is facing a triple crisis: floods, which have killed hundreds, coronavirus, which is on the increase, and enormous locust swarms, which will destroy the livelihoods of millions.
That was Mary Harper, our Africa editor. Still to come in this edition.
Give them hope and an encouragement. Tell them that this won't be forever. And explain to them that not everyone who gets the virus dies.
Some advice on how to educate your children at home during the lockdown from an award-winning teacher who really knows what he's talking about. In football, English Premier League clubs have voted unanimously to resume contact training. Since last week, England's top teams have been training without allowing the players to touch. It's hoped the season could resume next month. Laura Scott reports.
This next stage will involve close contact, such as tackling, and covers everything up to full team training. It is likely, however, that clubs would start out with small clusters of players in an effort to reduce the risk of transmission of coronavirus and limit the number of players that would be affected if there was a positive test among the squad. This is an important step, but brings with it more risk. So social distancing will still be required off the pitch, and the twice-weekly testing will continue. Clubs will meet again tomorrow to debate other elements of the plans to restart the season, including the fixture list, venues, and what would happen if the season cannot be completed.
Laura Scott. One impact is misinformation having on the global pandemic. Exclusive BBC research has tracked the human cost of misinformation. It includes assaults, arson, serious injuries and deaths as a result of rumours, false speculation, bogus cures and fake posts online. Mariana Spring from BBC Trending reports.
Brian lives in Florida. In April, he posted his thoughts on coronavirus on Facebook. He wasn't quite sure what coronavirus really was, but because of things he read online, he was convinced that the experts were lying.
I thought of maybe, you know, are they still working on the 5G? Because I've heard rumors, not from any news sources, but people talking about, oh, well, you know, it could cause effects, people getting sick over the 5G towers and being too close.
Just one of the many conspiracy theories that have been circulating online during the pandemic. Brian and his wife didn't keep away from other people or seek help when they fell ill with coronavirus. The couple ended up in hospital. That's where he was when I spoke to him by phone. He was getting better, but still struggling to breathe. His wife was in a much more serious condition, on a ventilator in a nearby ward.
The battle that they've been having is with her lungs. They're inflamed, and they've trying to get the best medication that they could find that was available to be able to help with it. And her body is just not responding.
Brian is no longer a coronavirus conspiracy theorist, and his case is just one of many examples of how dangerous misinformation can be. The BBC's anti-disinformation unit has investigated hundreds of misinformation cases and found dozens resulted in real human cost. Like the virus, it spread all over the world. Misleading information about the drug hydroxychloroquine has led to poisonings in the US, Vietnam, and Nigeria. Online rumours led to mob attacks in India. Those conspiracy theories that Brian mentioned about 5G mobile technology, well, phone masts have been set alight in the UK and other countries. Perhaps the deadliest incident happened in Iran, where health authorities say misleading messages about the preventative effects of drinking alcohol went viral on social media. Shayan Sadarizadeh is a disinformation expert with BBC Monitoring.
We started seeing posts in Telegram, which is one of the most popular messaging apps in Iran, and also on Instagram, that was memes, videos that were suggesting drinking alcohol can actually boost the immune system and disinfect the body and sort of prevent someone from catching COVID-19.
The authorities say the rumours caused nearly 800 deaths. It's difficult to verify each case in a country where the media is heavily restricted. Some of the most misleading information comes directly from world leaders and public figures.
And then I see the disinfectant where it knocks it out in a minute, 1 minute. And is there a way we can do something like that?
Doctors and poison centres in the US told us they've seen patients coming to direct harm because of misinformation promoted by President Trump and others. Dr. Duncan Maru treats coronavirus patients at Elmhurst Hospital in New York City.
I do think that President Trump's comments are a really tragic example where I think that the spread of misinformation actually influence some of the messaging that comes from our public officials, particularly if they have constituents who are vulnerable to that misinformation.
Brian, the coronavirus patient in Florida, has a message for the conspiracists.
We just can't be playing around anymore. This thing is real. And yeah, should have listened from the beginning. I agree. I didn't do that. And I'm sorry. And I know there are people that won't forgive me.
Brian from Florida, ending that report by Mariana Spring from BBC Trending. South Korea has reported its biggest spike in coronavirus cases in 2 months, just as over 2 million schoolchildren return to the classroom. As we record this podcast, 40 new cases of COVID-19 have been reported in the previous 24 hours. That's the sharpest increase in daily infections in 49 days. South Korea avoided locking down the country, but schools have been closed and officials are attempting a phased return to the classroom. Our correspondent Laura Bicker has visited a high school in Seoul.
Well, this is PE class. As you can probably tell, 2.5 million students are going back. This is part of a phased return. So a series of students go back every week. But teachers are on edge because there are clusters of infection popping up across the country. This is all related to an outbreak in nightclubs in Seoul's Party District a couple of weeks ago. Now, health officials have traced 86,000 people and tested them for the virus, but still these little pockets of infection keep cropping up. And that is why every single student must wear a mask. At the gates, they are having their temperature check. That's the first temperature check of the day. There are many, many, many kind of temperature checks throughout the day. Each of the classes have dividers in them to keep students apart. Daily, teachers are telling their students to keep that social distance. But it is extremely difficult. As you can imagine, this is the first time that they've seen each other in months. This is the start of the school term, which was supposed to happen in March. So they are very, very excited. I saw one student jump up and down, desperate to hug her friend, but was told no, 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 no by a teacher. But still, they are allowing students to go back to school. Some schools have decided to say no today, but this one has. And as you can see, they are enjoying their PE class. Now, they don't know much English, but they do have one word that they can say, which is hello. There you go. Hello from them.
That was Laura Bicker and a high school class in Seoul. Now, if you're among the enormous numbers of parents worldwide whose children haven't yet gone back to school, here's some useful advice on how to cope with the lockdown. It's from Peter Tabichi, a Kenyan science teacher and Franciscan friar. Last year, he won the annual Global Teacher Prize, a $1 million award for someone who's made an outstanding contribution to the profession. Like everyone else in Kenya, he's in lockdown, and he shared his top tips for children and parents who are having to practice schooling at home.
The first thing to do when teaching your children at home, get them to create a schedule so they can start and finish lessons at the same time on each day, and help them to stick to it. You can turn any space in your home into a classroom, and you don't need a degree to teach your child important lessons. You can explain where their food comes from. You can teach them how to cook and help them learn good table manners. Show them how to plant and grow vegetables, flowers and plants, and how to make a simple compost menu. And when you are outside, help them learn about different animals, birds and plants. Try to include your children in whatever you are doing. Get them to help with the laundry. And if you sew, teach them how to repair torn clothes and replace missing buttons.
3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Physical exercise is so important for children. They can use a rope for skipping or a tug of war. You can teach them how to ride a bike, among other things.
Get out of the way!
You can make a rain gauge to measure and record amount of rainfall. This pandemic presents us with an opportunity to explain what a virus is and how it spreads. Teach your children about good hygiene practice and how hand washing can protect them. And help them not to have so much fear. Give them hope and encouragement. Tell them that this won't be forever. And explain to them that not everyone who gets the virus dies. And when night falls, go and look at the stars. Identify and name the stars when the sky is clear. And go to bed knowing that you have done your best as a parent.
award-winning Kenyan schoolteacher Peter Tabichi, sharing some useful advice for parents and children worldwide. And my tip to parents is you're doing really well. Well done. And finally, there has been an arrest in Indian-administered Kashmir. The suspect is accused of spying for Pakistan, and that suspect is a pigeon. Our South Asia regional editor Ambarasan Etirajan told us more.
Well, it sounds like a very bad spy novel. What happened was police in Indian Kashmir, they said they took a pigeon into custody over the weekend because the locals thought it came from the Pakistani side. This is the India-Pakistan international border. It is like a normal farmland. So they suspected that this bird might be used for spying. And they found this was marked with a rose color paint. And also it had a small ring attached to its legs. And there were some numbers. So they got suspicious. So they handed it over to police. The police said they were going to decipher this code and they were finding it out. And it created a lot of media attraction. But later on, in Pakistan today, in a village just 4 kilometers from the same place, a villager said it was his pigeon. And he has a hobby of, rearing pigeons. And during the Eid time, it's common for people to celebrate. So he flew all his pigeons and one of them crossed the border without realizing there was a border. And he said the inscriptions on the ring was nothing but his mobile phone number.
They could presumably just ring it and clear everything up. Just how unusual is this sort of thing?
It is quite unusual because there was one incident, of course, in 2015. There was a similar accusations against a pigeon that it was spying on behalf of Pakistan. And, Indian officials often accuse, Pakistan of sending militants who cut through this international border and to fight against the Indian security forces. It also shows the paranoia, in that area. A number of, people, human beings, have been arrested on charges of spying. But now the suspicion is so much that even birds and animals are being viewed with a lot of suspicion. And now this Pakistani villager is asking India to return this pigeon because the partner of this pigeon is still waiting and it is languishing.
Ambarasan Etirajan, our South Asia regional editor. And that's it from us for now, but there will be an updated version of the Global News podcast later. If you would like to comment on this edition or the topics we've covered in it, or you want to send us pictures of your animals, languishing or otherwise, do please just send us an email. The address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. I'm Jackie Leonard, and until next time, goodbye.